Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This week, Groundwire is being produced during the National Campus and Community Radio Conference that's being hosted at CFRC in Kingston, Ontario. We're your hosts. I'm Mary Carl Giao.
I'm Anoush Nourizadeh Kolu. In this edition, we'll be covering the missing women inquiry, the Quebec student strike and casserole protest, and Aboriginal Day programming. But first, here's the headlines.
The Pride Parade in Kingston took to the streets on Saturday as the main event in a month-long series of events to celebrate the city's queer community. Several hundred people filled three city blocks in a celebration that started in the city in 1989. There were also groups from the queer community who came out to express solidarity with a range of social justice causes. Members of Occupy Kingston organized an Occupride block in the parade, which marched under a pro-fabulous anti-capitalist banner. According to their Facebook page, they wore pink and purple bandanas and brought out their pots and pans in solidarity with Quebec students on strike. Here is Matthew Thornton of Occupy Kingston, who helped to organize the Occupride block.
The stereotypes in the media, unfortunately, people think that everything's all peachy for the gay community, that, you know, homophobia and heterosexism doesn't exist anymore. But unfortunately, it's very true. And members of the gay community themselves help perpetuate that stereotype and help perpetuate the status quo because they are experiencing a level of privilege that, say, transgendered people don't have.
In an email exchange with a member of the Kingston Pride Organizing Committee, it was revealed that Occupy Kingston might be banned from the parade because the views of Occupy did not seem to be in line with the values of Pride. However, that decision was later rescinded by Kingston Pride. This is Thornton explaining the original email he got from the organizing committee.
It picked up quite a bit of controversy here in town, to the point where within 20 minutes, a good chunk of the Kingston Pride organizing committee got in touch with me saying that this person had no official capacity to say what he said. He had no authority to send out that kind of email. He said in the email that the organizing committee made this decision when in fact it was only him. So, you know, there was a huge, like about an hour of just clearing it all up, and I talked to the committee, and then they actually released like an official letter about it saying that we are more than welcome to attend.
For Groundwire, this is CKUT's Aaron Lakoff reporting from the NCRC in Kingston.
Since the passing of Law 78 in Quebec, casseroles protests have spread to cities across Canada. By banging on pots and pans weekly, or in some cities several times a week, communities are noisily demonstrating their solidarity with the people of Quebec defying Law 78 and the ongoing student strike. Groundwire asked marchers in Kingston why they joined the casserole.
My daughter is still paying until 2019 for her student loan, and now her son is going to be getting into debt, and I'll be have to help them out, so I have a very strong interest. Besides, I think education should be free.
Why do you come out to the casseroles in Kingston?
Well, okay, partly the Quebecois thing, but I like, you know, Bill 78 doesn't have that much to do with Kingston. It's not the War Measures Act 1970, except that the army was rolling into Quebec. So how far are we going to go with that?
Groundwire spoke to one participant about the relevance of the casserole in Kingston, Ontario.
I think we're still struggling to find ways of making casseroles locally relevant outside of Quebec. So we're trying to find ways to make it issues that mean something to us, and that's going to take a while to evolve.
In Winnipeg on May 31st, a Bill 78 solidarity rally was held in downtown, in which close to 200 people took to the streets. David Camfield spoke at the march.
People to come together to plan more actions in solidarity and to plan what we can do to bring the spirit of Quebec students here to Winnipeg, to organize, to confront the conditions that we face. Because we have to support them, but the best thing we can do is to take their spirit and organize to make change here.
Casseroles continue across Canada. Check your local listings for details. Thanks to CKUT and Ken Harrison of Winnipeg Community TV for audio contributions. And now it's time for the Community Radio Report.
The National Campus Community Radio Association's annual conference took place last week in Kingston, Ontario. Roughly 100 delegates from across the country participated in this six-day event. Gretchen King brings us voices from the conference's organizers.
What are you taking away from this conference, from the NCRA?
Beaucoup d'originalité, beaucoup de spontanéité, beaucoup de créativité, des échanges d'idées, des ateliers avec vraiment beaucoup de contenu, de la diversité et puis beaucoup de franchise et d'honnêteté aussi. Ça, c'est quelque chose qu'on pourrait exploiter et développer chez nous, de notre côté, du côté des radios francophones canadiennes.
What are you hoping for the next five even years for this conference and this organization?
More commitment to Aboriginal language programmings at stations, more inclusion of First Nations people at radio stations, more people of color on the board.
Based, I guess, on what you've seen in terms of conversations over the last week, we're not only celebrating multiple anniversaries with the 30th of the NCRC and the 25th of the NCRA and 90 years of CFRC. How is all that, I don't know, ancient history synergizing into a wonderful week of a lot of collective learning and growing?
What's, I think, been most amazing about it is when we got here to the venue tonight for our gala, we realized there was only enough tables and chairs for 50 people, and we knew that there was like at least 100 people coming tonight. So in this like half hour mad scramble, we managed to like get everything rearranged, extra tables and chairs, linens on the tables, the bar set up, food arranged, and everything just came together thanks to people working together, which is like also the story of our stations, I think. You know, everyone is in this precarious situation. There's funding challenges in the campus sector. There's a lot of threats to the stability of student funding. You know, CRTC regulatory crackdowns are affecting some stations, and then the financial stuff is just this ongoing. It's always a challenge to operate stations that are not-for-profit and underfunded. But still, we keep plugging out awesome shows and are like a gravitational hub for like incredible, warm and extremely talented and radical people, and it's through this like group effort of working together and that allows this sector and the stations in it to continue to exist and to flourish. It really is about people power, and I think the conference reflects that.
We did not ask you white men to come here. The Great Spirit gave us this country as a home. You had yours. We did not interfere with you. We do not want your civilization, crazy horse of the Lakota Nation.
And in my death, I saw the heaven of the white world. It is as they describe it.
Here
is what the white world did not tell you. The white world, my children, will soon.
Know where we're going, we should know where we've been. It's her, the island, her people, and the story of them. Game boy on the ones and twos. The Northwest kid, we can't all leap forever. Money will mean nothing, and whitewashed faces will drift places wasted. As I reflect in mere reflections of change to the settler's society's brain, I feel my four directions will change in an imbalance of state. And keep away the time of day to change our ways, because the man's gonna. at it, masking all of his foul play with perfume and spray and bad cliches. The money our economy seeks, the only language most speak will fray. Their systems, the grounds that the settlers lay, from what their settlers, citizens made, will fade as the rivers in Canada continue to braid into the home of the greed and the land of the slaves. Every settler settling for minimum wage, or any native who's affected by a Hudson's Bay, let this ghost dance take you away.
That was Ghost Dance by the Northwest Kid, also known as Craigie Craig.
On June 6th, the Missing Women Commission of Inquiry into the Picton murders in British Columbia ended after 8 months of legal investigation. The inquiry was put in place to investigate the Robert Picton murders of 33 Indigenous women from Vancouver's downtown east side. The inquiry is being heavily criticized as corrupt, unjust, and as lacking transparency. Grand Chief Stuart Phillip, president of the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, spoke during a break on the last day of the Missing Women inquiry about the BC government's refusal to fund lawyers for the families of the missing and murdered women, and criticized the work of Commissioner Wally Opal.
All this inquiry did was provide a platform for police agencies to provide a litany of lame excuses, missing evidence, and were absolutely unwilling to bring forward the witnesses that needed to provide testimony. But most importantly, the very groups that had the most to offer, the greatest amount of knowledge and experience, the groups, the women's groups from the downtown east side, were denied due process. Shame! On the one hand, we were granted standing and partial standing, but under the provincial government, denied critical and vital funding for us to fully participate in this inquiry process. The only lawyer that had an opportunity to challenge the legions of police officials was Cameron Ward and Robert Gervais. And they were attacked by that pack of high-paid, high-priced police lawyers, those legal hyenas, those parasites that prey on the poverty of the marginalized people of the downtown east side. And we were denied due process to have at least an additional 15 lawyers in there to rip their stories to shreds. So this inquiry was a complete whitewash. Opal!
Whitewash!
Opal!
On the final day of the inquiry, families of the missing and murdered women criticized the inquiry process and addressed its complete failure.
I'm Bridget Perrier. This wasn't a fair fairness. This was racism. This was classism at its finest. These families need closure. They need the right answers, and accountability needs to be heard, whether it's from the justice system and especially Vancouver Police Department, the Crown, and the RCMP. Why are we here? This was a waste of 8 months for us. We still have unanswered questions.
Can I think we have more questions now?
What do we want?
Justice!
What do we want?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
If this is what Canada's legality system does for families that are, you know, entrapped, encased in losing their loved ones, their sacred women, then this isn't a country I want to be a part of. I'm a First Nations woman, a mother of a child who lost her mother, and I will not let my daughter's questions go unanswered. This is a dirty shame. This was a sham. This was a waste of our time. We are the ones that are missing weeks of work off. I'm leaving children behind. I'm sure some of these other women are too. And this was not fair. We still have those questions.
So how much more is it going to take in order for us to get our answers? What do we do now? We now have to go to another source where maybe we can get support in this country. How disgusting it is for us to have to go through this again.
In Canada, you're allowed to murder by race. and class. This is just a true showing of murdering by race or class. These women weren't above class. To them, they were below class.
Hello, my name is Donnelly Sebastian. This year has been 20 years my mother has been missing, and we are left with the anger and the frustration. Must this continue to be the fate of our women? As the daughter of a missing woman named Elsie, we can only hope to find her and bring her home and grant her the peace and the respect that she never got throughout life. She still has that inherent right to be brought home traditionally with a feast and a death feast for her in her name and her honor.
Cameron Ward, a lawyer who represents the families of more than 24 missing and murdered women, says the inquiry neglected to hear from a number of crucial witnesses and allowed the police to decide which evidence and documents to disclose. Ward has argued it didn't hear enough evidence to determine why the serial killer was able to murder these women with impunity. After the 8-month-long inquiry, families of the women murdered by Robert Picton are still left with many questions and still seeking justice. For Groundwire, this is Candace Cascanet from CKUT Radio in Montreal.
In early May, a group of people representing Indigenous tribes in Alberta, northern BC, and communities along the West Coast made their way across Canada to Toronto by train as part of an action to raise public awareness and put an end to a controversial oil pipeline project. CKUW contributor Michael Welch brings us the details of their journey following their stop in Winnipeg.
The Yinka Dene Alliance is a group of Indigenous tribes representing Nadlewutin, Nakazdli, Takla Lake, Saikuz, and Wet'suwet'en First Nations. Their territory in BC and Alberta comprises 25% of the Northern Gateway Oil Pipelines and Tankers project being engineered by the company Enbridge. These tribes resolved to prevent this pipeline from being built. A train had been set up to transport them to Toronto, where an Enbridge shareholders meeting was to take place. Following is some of the audio from their stop at a gathering in Winnipeg. A number of them spoke about the project and on the importance of stopping it. Here is Saikuz chief, Jackie
Enbridge
Thomas.
Is trying to build a tar sands oil pipeline that will pump massive amounts of bitumen across over 1,000 rivers and creeks on its journey to the coast. It will bring over 225 massive oil tankers that are larger than the Eiffel Tower to the most dangerous waters in Canada, the Pacific North Coast, the territories of my brothers and sisters on the coast. This tar sands project threatens us all. It threatens all our communities. When oil spills can never be cleaned up. Most of the oil spilled into our water and our rivers will stain the environment and poison not only our people, but all First Nations and non-First Nations people that live with us and that are our neighbors too. That's why we have decided to actually ban these pipelines from our lands, because our laws require this protection of our lands and environment. Our nations are the wall that this pipeline will not break through. Our nations will not be turned. We won't trade the safety of our rivers, our land, our fish, our medicines, and our lifeblood for Enbridge's false promises. This project will not happen, and we will use every means available to us to ensure that. Period.
Vice President of the Haida Nation, April Churchill.
Take a look around the world at people who do not have water. Look at the hardship of their children. Those are the hardships that we will give to our children if this generation does not put an end to this capitalism, this corporation, the evolution of the free market that's killing all of us and killing our land.
Our priority as Indigenous people has always been and has always will be the watersheds, the land, the ocean, the rivers, the mountains, the countless animals, the fish, and the birds. our sacred culture, our practices, and our traditions. And on the other hand, Enbridge's priorities are destroying and killing us. The tar sands, the pipelines, the super tankers, that's their priorities and not our priorities. That is the destruction and the devastation that we don't want or need. Our answer to Enbridge is as simple and as final as no.
On Wednesday, May 9th, a delegation held a protest and march outside the hotel where Enbridge shareholders conducted their meeting. A small delegation were allowed to participate in the meeting. According to Canadian press, Enbridge states the project will create jobs, stimulate economic development, and be safe. And Enbridge CEO Pat Daniel was committed to finding common ground with affected First Nations. As the debate over the safety of these pipelines rages on, here's an update. As detailed in the major press, on June 7th, nearly 3,000 barrels of oil from a ruptured pipeline are estimated to have spilled into the Red Deer River in central Alberta. The pipeline belongs to Plains Midstream Canada. The Red Deer River is the source of drinking water for Alberta's third largest city, Red Deer. From Winnipeg, in the heart of Anishinaabe territory, this is Michael Welch of CKUW reporting for Groundwire. Many thanks to contributors Alex Patterson of CKUW and Emma Pullman of the Vancouver Observer for their roles in putting together this report.
That piece on the Yinka Dene Alliance was produced by Michael Welch with the assistance of Alex Patterson and Emma Pullman. In that piece, you heard Chief Jackie Thomas, Vice President of the Haida Nation, April Churchill, and 11-year-old singer Takaya Blaney of the Slimmin First Nation.
Gennarty O'Sullivan talked to Musqueam youth, an elder, and Cecilia Point, a spokesperson for the Musqueam people.
I'm
at the Musqueam Reserve, and I'm speaking with Bud. And he's also a Musqueam person, right?
Yes.
How old are you?
14. Reserve at Sisnam, protecting our ancestors.
Hi.
How old are you?
15.
And so are you also a Musqueam?
Yes.
Are you part something else?
Yes, I am. I am part of the Six Nation territory. That's my mom's side, and she's half Mohawk.
So why is it important for you as a 15-year-old to be here at this burial site?
Because we, to protect our ancestors for one, but more younger groups should come and learn.
Ask them, 14-year-olds to come support Musqueam.
This is Gennarty O'Sullivan, and I am speaking with Cecilia Point, who is of the Musqueam Band, and they are currently protecting an ancient burial site at the foot of Arthur Lang Bridge in Vancouver at 1338 Southwest Marine Drive. And she is here to share an overview of the struggle as they have been protecting their land. Cecilia?
Hi, Gennarty. So the site in Vancouver is known as the Marpole Midden, but to us, the Musqueam people, it is known as Sisnam, and it is a village that has existed in our oral history for thousands of years. And my great-grandfather, James Point, used to live in this area and, of course, always told stories about it and the people that lived here. So there were hundreds of people who perished in this village, mostly due to smallpox, and as most Canadians know, smallpox wiped out a lot of First Nations people, so there are hundreds buried right here. And the site is also declared a National Historic Site by the federal government in 1933. So what's happened here, and I'm not sure how it happened, is a developer has been issued permits to begin digging, and when they started digging, of course, they started unearthing bodies and also small pieces of artifacts and tools and some things that we used to use, because it's all sitting very close to the surface. Today is day 44, and throughout this last protest, We all boarded buses to go to the BC provincial legislature to raise this issue in question period. We protested in front of the BC premier's office. We blockaded Robson Street for a time. We held a protest in front of Mountain View Cemetery, which is Vancouver's only cemetery, with mock development signs asking people, how would you feel if we were to just start digging up bodies here and put up condos? And none of those really netted us much media attention. So we were left as a last resort on May 31st to blockade the Arthur Lang Bridge, which, as Gernardji mentioned, is between the Vancouver International Airport and Vancouver. So we blockaded people from going to work and to the airport for over a couple of hours.
At the Musqueam protest here, everybody's getting ready to go to the top of the bridge. Right now, we're under the bridge, peacefully standing with our signs. The drummers are drumming us the morning in for us. It's about 6:30, quarter to 7. How you feel about this big step that the Musqueam people took today as they come up from under the bridge and now are on top?
Unfortunately, that it had to come to something like this to raise the attention in regards to the village site of our ancestors, you know, and there was an easy resolution. There was something on the table that was provided. Our government, our provincial government, is unfortunately not willing to seek that as a resolution.
Fortunately, that action netted us some results. The provincial Aboriginal Relations Minister, Mary Pollock, announced to the media that day that she was working with us. Of course, she said, oh, she's been working with us all along, but really no one from her office was working on this file. So finally, what we were asking for, the province of BC owed us three other pieces of land from other issues in BC dealing with the Musqueam people. So instead of offering us that land, they have offered to give us cash in lieu. So they will be forwarding cash to us so that we can purchase this property where the developer is developing, and hopefully he will accept a good price and just move to another site. So that's where we're at now. Unfortunately, we're left with the solution to purchase our own land back from this developer, which is, you know, not the best solution that we could think of, but it was the quickest, because dealing with, everyone stopping to dig up First Nations burial sites just doesn't seem to be in the offing at all. It really was going to take us years. So we're going to buy the site, we're going to protect it, we're going to put up some memorial markers and make it an open park for all to come and see, you know, that this belongs to Musqueam people, it's Musqueam territory, and we're going to welcome people to Vancouver at a beautiful site, and that's our long-term goal here.
The Musqueam people are now waiting to hear from the developer. Tune in to your local campus and community radio stations on June 21st for a National Aboriginal Day broadcast.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced during the NCRC. A special thanks to Gunnergy O'Sullivan for sharing her stories with us. Thank you also to Leanne Arneson, Gretchen King, Aaron Lakoff, Candice Kaskinet, Michael Welsh, Carly Forbes, and Greg Bolter.